Also wanted to remember, and I did put this on the announcements, Mark hurt his tailbone, and so as a result of that, he's not as comfortable as he would like to be, and Natalie had hurt her back and is not as comfortable as she'd like to be, but it's good to see both of them in our assembly today. Appreciate so much you being here. It is such an encouragement, not just to me, but to every one of us, and we do thank you. And we again thank the visitors for coming and being with us. Appreciate it so much. So I would just like to say that since we did that for Glendon, I tell you, I really appreciate him very much. And he's one of those people that has certainly I've looked up to through the years. And it was such a pleasure to get to be a part of that the other night. And I just thank a lot of you, Glendon and Edith, but for this occasion it was mostly for Glendon. And it was just such a precious look on his face. The only thing I would wish, we just had a camera there to take that picture. But I'm glad that we were able to do that. It was, and there was a lot of other people who would like to have come and just weren't able to, and so appreciate that. I've been asked to preach a lesson about Job. I'll have to do it my way, so this, as always, will be probably a little different, but I want to go through some things about Job. Most people think of Job and they think of perseverance and patience. And certainly we would want to think that way about him as an individual, but there's a lot more in Job than just that particular aspect of his life. And when we study this, one of the things is I hope that as we go through some of these things, we start seeing a little bit something about ourselves. A little bit about, unfortunately, what we call human nature. And as we look at this and we think about Job, we start to see some things that, in reality, as I look at the various people in this book, and he's reminding me it's not up there. As I look at the various people in this book, I think, well, you know, I have probably one time or another been each one of those individuals to some degree. And I hope as we go through this that you'll think about it like that and you'll understand that just like every other human that's lived on the face of this earth, there are things we go through, there are things that we approach other people that they're going through, and we do all these things differently. But what we find in all of this, just so that I don't confuse anyone, when we get to the end, it's really not about all of this, as we find out from other scriptures. That in reality, when we get toward the end and we see God's part in this, we certainly see a different thing. He probably lived about the time of Abraham. Don't know. He may have lived earlier, may have lived later. I would argue for earlier. He lived in Uz. Uz is believed to be about where Jordan or Saudi Arabia is today, somewhere in that area. We know that Abraham was from Ur of the Chaldees, which would have been up in Iraq. And I've been doing this on Wednesday night, just trying to get, as we've tried, and Kyle and others have talked about the geography of the area and certain things. It's just interesting to know where all these people came from, pretty much the same area. So it shows us that there were people living at various times throughout history that sought out God. And they sought Him out without a written revelation. They truly did what it says in Romans 1. They looked for God. And they saw Him in everything that they saw. And as a result of that, we do know that there were people on the earth that did reveal things. Like, for instance, in the time of Abraham, Melchizedek was a high priest of God. And we know that Abraham knew that and that he could depend on him for good information and for various things. And so we know that there were those people around who received some type of revelation from God during this whole period of time. And lots of times you've heard people talk about heads of families. Well, there were certain heads of families. It doesn't say that all heads of families received something, but God made sure. And He clearly says, now if you ever hear someone arguing about this, He clearly says in the book of Isaiah, He had not hidden Himself. He'd revealed Himself through creation and revelation. He didn't say just part of the time. He's talking about all the time. So He gave that. We know they weren't Jews. That's a fact. They were not Israelites because they sacrificed for themselves. I could give you a lot of scriptures that said it was wrong for just the average person that was not a Levite. And we know for sure they weren't Levites. It tells us where they were from, and they were not from Israel. So, lessons. things, why they were so differently. And I personally break down the book of Job in 5 sections. I've told you before, I have to do it my way, you can do it, whatever. All I encourage people to do is every book and everything you're trying to learn, there are things you can do for your memory to help you better know about these books. It's easy for me to think of this in 5 different sections, or as some would say, 5 different acts, or whatever you want to remember it as. That's the way I remember it. And so it's easier for me to do that. And at the end, I want to talk about some lessons. But first, let's talk about the background. I believe 5 sections. I believe the first one is the background. I believe that's chapters 1 and 2. I would argue that he's trying to give us, whoever wrote this book, some believe Job himself wrote it, others believe someone else wrote it. It seems a good argument for Job, because he certainly is, whoever this person is quite familiar with all that went on. But regardless, we learn a lot about him and about the background of what's about to happen. In this next section, I believe we have this conversations he has with 3 friends. Now, we find out later that there's actually a 4th person there, at least. There may have been more, but there was at least a 4th person there that was listening to all this. It does not mean when it says 3 that there was only 3 there. We will know that. But everybody else, if there was even, we know at least one more, but if there was others, they kept quiet, never said anything. So what we find in this is, it's a typical situation. Someone has, as we found out, a major problem. So 3 through 21 of those conversations. And then we have Elihu or Elihu actually giving his speech in 32 through 37. And then we find the Lord's response in 38 through 41. Very powerful response to all of this that's going on. And then at the end, the last chapter just basically talks about his repentance and his renewal. Now, these are my words. You're not probably going to find, I don't think you'd ever find anything like this. I mean, I'm not saying, I'm trying to tell you that I have to do it my way. I have to think of books my way. I'm not asking you to do the same thing. That's just the way I'm going to discuss this today. So the background, we find that his character is given. Blameless, upright, feared God, shunned evil. You don't get any better than that. Really, you don't. That is just the ideal person. You look at them and you think about him and you think, wow, I mean, that's the kind of person I want to be, and that's the way I want to be. Of course, he was married, and he had the 7 sons and 3 daughters at this point. And we find that he took care of them, and they were doing well as well. But we find that his possessions were great. I just list them. I'm not going through all of this, because I just want to give a background of this man and then talk about some conversations and what this could mean to us. We find, for instance, he had a very large household. The Bible says that he was the greatest of all the people of the East. Now, we know of people like an Abraham. Now, the East is that area there, and this man has more than all of them. We find that he's very faithful. He regularly sacrificed. He didn't do this occasionally. He just didn't do it when it met his purposes. He regularly sacrificed. And every time they would get together, he would go ahead and do a sacrifice in case something went wrong. He wanted to make sure God was pleased with them. Now, what that means is, with all those possessions that he had, he was willing to give up whatever God had asked him to give up. That's a sacrifice for sin. He understood the great consequences, and keep this in mind, of sin. He understood that if he departed from God, that it was going to be a bad situation for him. He understands all of this. His evaluation from God is found in verse 8. There's none. Now, God's just not making this statement. He's actually talking to Satan at this point, and he makes a statement. He says, there is none like him in all the earth. Now, you understand why I said, I don't believe Abraham was right. Because you look at an Abraham, we'd say the same thing, or some of these other people, and they're great people. But during periods of time, we have noted this before, haven't we? Like a Noah stood out. You know why he stood out? He was good, but it wasn't just that. The contrast between him and everyone else was stark. You would have seen a Noah and you said, that man is totally different from anybody I've ever been around in my life. Isn't that amazing? Wouldn't that be what you'd want to be said about us? I've never met a group of people like them. There's none like him in all the earth. His suffering, let me tell you what he went through. He had what most people would consider everything. Greatest on the earth at that time in the East. What did he lose? 7 sons, 3 daughters. What did he lose? All his possessions. What does he eventually lose? His health. Let me ask you a question. Is there anything else to lose? There is. There's one other thing that he can lose. And that is what's critical about this. Because none of these things matter unless it affects the last one. If he loses his salvation over these things, then he's lost it all. It doesn't matter how much you have, or what you have, or what your relationships are. What matters is how you leave this life. And he's even tempted by his wife. Now, when we talk about temptation, it doesn't mean that Job thought about this and thought, I'm going to do this. That's not what I'm talking about. A temptation was put before him by his wife. The only one left in his life that was his personal family and his great and his household. He even lost his servants, everything, if you read back through that, except for a few. And think about this for a moment. She comes up to him. And I have, you know, I've told you before, I have a different view of this. I think that she thought this was love. I think she was very, she lost 7 sons, 3 daughters. She lost all her possessions. She has lost everything that she's ever known. And she looks at her husband and she's thinking, I can't stand this. Most of us would look at that, and how many times have you gone and looked at someone and you thought, how do you pray about this? This person is in such bad health. I'm not making excuses for her. I'm just telling you, this is us. You've studied the book of Ecclesiastes. This is life under the sun. This is a woman who looks at him and goes, why don't you just curse God and die? Because her belief was very strong about God. She actually believed that it would be better in his case to be dead. Now, this is her husband. This is all she has left, pretty much. And yet she's encouraging him because she can't stand his suffering. Question. This is proof, by the way. I'm throwing in some things as I go, that when these people believe in suicide because they're suffering so much, this is proof that's not the way out. Now, it may seem like the way out, but it is not the way out. This is not the way out. The way out, as we're going to find, is that whatever happens to you in life, and this is the lesson, whatever, how devastating it may be, you keep your faith with God. You don't do anything else. And let me tell you what. I can get up here and preach this out until I'm blue in the face. That's a lot easier to preach than it is to do. Because if I lost everything, where would I be? Up to this point, Job does not, the Bible says, sin with his lips or charge God foolishly. Now what's charging God foolishly? Charging God foolishly is saying something you don't know anything about God. It's talking about the things in the New Testament that God would say, don't talk about things you don't understand. Don't start talking about things about angels and these beings in heaven you do not understand. We have no right. We don't have a right to talk about a realm He's not revealed to us, except for what He's revealed to us about it, and that's it. We don't speak evil of those dignitaries, and if you look at that in context, he's talking about that. So, Job needs to be careful. Job needs to be careful about what he says. So does the rest of them. Said it twice. 122 and 210. Now let's get to the next point. Conversations. Some have said, well, you doubt the three were actually his friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And you can see that they came from other locations, other countries, or other regions. And they've been friends of his for a long time. You can see that in this. They're all getting a little bit older and they enjoy their time together. And originally they come and they comfort him. But I'm going to ask you again, and I'm going to ask me again to look at myself when I'm doing this. Lots of times when we go to, in theory, be a comfort for someone who is suffering something really badly, have you ever had someone say, wow, the last person I knew had that died. I've been there when they say that. They're not thinking. And I'm not making fun of anyone because our mouth says things sometimes. It's like, where'd that come from? And you go away and you go, oh, whew, I wish I'd never said that. And I see some smiles. You know you've done it. And that's one of our problems. And so you've got these three friends that have come and they sit there with him and they do this, it says, on the ground 7 days and 7 nights and no one spoke. Lots of times, I'm going to tell you right now, it's better to keep your mouth shut. You can see that in this. If it had kept their mouth shut, things would have been good. They don't. But Job finally starts talking. And here's a problem. He comes to some conclusions. Now remember yourself today. You have 66 books to look at, correct? That we have as the canon. Job had zero that we know of books to pick up and learn from. The only way he could have learned is somehow it was revealed to him from God, either directly or indirectly. He has unlimited knowledge compared to us. But what we do know is, even with that limit, we need to be careful. So Job starts out, and here's his conclusion. What a lot of us come to. I am suffering so much. And I only put down some of the scriptures where he talks about this, by the way. He talks about it frequently. It's not just him. He curses that day. It would be like me picking my day of birth. And I say that that date, back in 1987, was... back in 1952, is cursed. I wish it had never been. I wish it was off the calendar. Now, I'm not saying they had calendars. I'm just saying. That's what he's doing. He's saying, I just, when they said a male child is here, I wish it never happened. That day is blackness. He's cursing the whole day. He's saying to God, I wish that had never been. Now, that's not his choice. See, we sometimes make statements that we should never say. He's a wonderful man. But I'm going to tell you what. He is suffering horribly. He's not suffering just mentally. This man is suffering so much physically, it said he was scraping those sores, boils, or whatever it was. He is in total misery. And they're not just on part of his body. They're all over him. And if you've ever had a boil, or anyone knows about someone's had a boil, just one boil, if that's what it was, it's horrifyingly miserable. You cannot get comfort. Think about having them all over. This man is doing what any of us would do. He even talks about things he doesn't know about. He says in verse 8, those who are ready to rouse Leviathan. He talks about, may those curse it who curse the day, those who are ready to rouse. He said, people who are brave enough to face whatever Leviathan was, I want them to curse this day too. This is a man who is suddenly, life is not what it was, and suddenly he just wishes it wasn't there at all. At this moment, he wishes life was gone. He will not curse it. You remember what she said? Why don't you curse God? He won't do that. He'll curse the day that God created. But he won't curse God. You see what he's doing in this? He's being trying, thinking he's being very careful. By the way, I got all the apologies in the world for Job. I think he's a great brother. I think this man was a tremendous man. I am not picking on him at all. I have told you before, I'm just so glad this is not titled Abe. Because most of you would be in this room going, what? This is a wonderful man. I'm not saying that. He did not believe that he deserved what he considered punishment. See, one of our things about life is, I'm just not deserving of this. Where is it we find anywhere that we're deserving of anything one way or the other? Where is it that we find that I'm so deserving of having perfect health? Or all the things of this world? Where do you find that? Where do you find in God's Word that anywhere that because of I think that I am this faithful person that I should never ever suffer anything? But he didn't think that. He believed that God was actually doing things to him, and he just couldn't understand that. He says, I don't understand this. Well, how could this be? And he says, whom God has hedged in. And the thing is, I'm suffering these things. And he would say later on in 7:20 and 21, have I sinned? What have I done to you, O watcher of men? God, what did I ever do to you? That's wrong. I love Job, but I'll tell you what, we learn a powerful lesson in this. Don't start questioning God. Not like this. He's saying, Why have you set me as your target? It's powerful. But wouldn't you, if you didn't know anything about what life was going on, wouldn't you have thought the same thing? If you believe that God's in complete control, there is no other being out there, He's over in charge, and you're trying to think back in your life, you know you haven't done perfectly. I'm not saying Job believed that he was perfectly sinless, but he just didn't believe he'd done anything to deserve this. And what we don't understand is the New Testament certainly clears it up for us, so I'll just throw the Scripture out. The wages of sin is death. See, that's the deserving part of it, but that's not what he was getting. He had a good life. Things were good, and he was trying his best to follow God. He believed that God had brought this punishment on him. He didn't believe he deserved it. He believed God had brought it. And I already used a passage. He believed God had completely left him. He believed God wasn't even there in the picture anymore. In 29, 1 through, and through 30, 31. He just believed that I'm here. And all of a sudden, God has just left me. About his friends, one of my favorite passages in this is 12. 1, 2, and 3. He says to his friends, and remember, these are his friends. This is his response to them after they have done some things we'll talk about. But they said, no doubt you're the people and wisdom will die with you. You ever felt like saying that to someone that's there declaring something to you? And you probably felt like saying that to me a few times. But when you get to this, he said, but I have understanding as well as you. I'm not inferior to you. And we're not. There's no inferiority in this. There's no superiority in this in life. Truth is, we all have equal opportunity and one we have choice. And he's saying to them, you think you can, by the time you leave, all wisdom will have left the earth. And that's the way he felt about it. He said they weren't comforters. He said they lied. They were worthless physicians. They should not speak for God. Question, have any of you ever had that feeling about your friends? About people you depended on? About people you think had done maybe things to you and this is the way you felt about them? He said they mocked him and tormented him. Ever been on the end of that? And he says that he wishes that he could contend with God. Of all the statements that he makes, this one he's going to answer for. I'll tell you right now. He's going to answer for this one. He thinks that if God would just give him this opportunity. Let me give you an illustration of this. This would be like saying, if President Obama would give me an opportunity, I could straighten out everything. This is even worse. This is talking about the God of heaven. He says, here I am. He said, he won't even contend with me. In other words, he won't have a discussion with me in verse 7. He won't do this. He will not talk to me about this. He's saying, if I could talk to him in some of those passages, I could show him. I could prove to him that this is all wrong. He says in verse, let me give you one of the passages that sticks out with me. It's chapter 13, verse 3. He said, but I would speak to the Almighty, and I desire to reason with God. Wrong. Beautiful man. That's wrong. He doesn't know this. We do. You ever heard someone say this? I can't believe that God did that. You ever heard anyone say that? I can't believe God let that happen. I can't believe why would God have killed that person. You ever heard all of that? Sure you have. They're contending with God. They're trying to use their wisdom to figure out about God, and that's wrong. But he still believed in God. I'm going to tell you right now, through it all, he had the patience and the perseverance to believe in God. Throughout this whole thing, he never once said, well, God's an evil person or anything, being or anything like that. He still had total faith in God. That is one thing about him. But he does question why the wicked live and he suffers. In 21:7 through 34. But he did not believe that he had sinned so as to deserve this. You can find that in 31:1 through 40 and 32:1. Now, just quickly, his friends' conclusions, and we'll end the first part. His friends come up with a good solution. You see, if Glendon's suffering, and I come to him, the first thing I'm going to tell him in the hospital is, you deserve this because you've sinned. That's basically what went on here. Job said, prove it. Show me. Show me what my sin is. And they said, well, you're just hiding it from us. Well, no, I'm not. I know I haven't always done right, but go ahead. Show me where it is. I am basically living in sin. Show me. Show me one thing I've done. Can you say I went into my neighbor's wife? Can you say I have cheated someone? Can you say I've offered a bribe? They said, well, okay, so we don't have anything on you, but we're going to steal a kid. You ever been on either the receiving end of that or the giving end of that? Where you just know someone did something wrong. You just know they did. And you'll state it even though you have absolutely no proof. That's what they did. You don't do this. Not even to your enemy you don't do this. We don't make statements of fact about things we do not know. We have no right to accuse someone of something we cannot prove. You ever had someone say, I've asked people, okay, you know, let's bring the other person in. Oh, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I'd rather just leave this between me and you. No, you're not going to leave it between me. It's not going to happen with me. This is wrong. And this one is so cruel. I've thought about this one a lot. They said, Bildad says, well, God doesn't subvert judgment, basically. Or does the Almighty pervert justice? If your sons have sinned against Him, He's cast them away for the transgressions. You know why your sons died, Job? They sinned too. Wow. I mean, it's hard enough to take it when they're hammering you, but, boy. And then finally they say, well, you know, you should accept the chastening of the Almighty. Of all the things they said, this one's true. God does chasten us. Those He loves, He chastens. One other thing they said about Him was, you just talk too much. In 11:1-6 and 15:1-16, Job, you're just talking too much. It's just your mouth just running and you're not saying anything. And actually, Job was, for the most part, saying some really good things. For the most part. But their view was, he shouldn't be saying anything. He had no right. And that's not right. He did have a right. When we think about life under the sun, basically, it is a difficult thing. Because what we do is, so many times, we don't look to God first for how we act or react. We look to our emotions. We look to our own wisdom. We look to our own think-sos, but we don't look to God. And what happens is this. When you're looking at yourself and you're thinking, I'm a pretty good person. I don't really see where I need God in my life because I already have Him in my life and things are well. And He says to you, well, actually you do need to make some change completely. You need to completely renew your life. And the way you do that is through obedience to my will. So which one are you going to listen to? Yourself or God? It'll totally change your life when you become a child of God. You will become a new creation or a new creature. If you have any needs today, we would be glad to assist you. Would you please stand?